to the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome to the Deco Retro program. I've called our program today Going by Train, and I'm reading two accounts of train journeys. The first by author Dennis Dwyer from his book New Zealand Adventures by Rail, and the second is from Catherine Mansfield's journal of a train trip she took in November 1907 over the Kaingaroa Plain in the North Island. And also joining me today is Reverend David Crook to tell us about some of his experiences of going by train. But first, here's Dennis Dwyer's account of taking the last train to Clyde, including the Tairi Gorge Railway in 1990. Last train to Clyde. On boarding the last train from Dunedin to Clyde in April 1990, I felt both fortune and sadness. Fortune in that I was able to do it, and sadness because it was the end of a line that had taken immense work to create and maintain. The bean counters had won out. After construction material for the Clyde Dam project had been transported earlier that year, there was little other traffic, and the death warrant was signed. The line had never lacked fervent supporters. An Otago Central Railway League had once vied with other leagues to extend its network and improve services. Things could get nasty. In 1906, the Cromwell Argus deplored the secret machinations of the Catlins Railway League and its odious conduct in trying to prevent an extension of the central line to get more funds for itself. In turn, the Catlins League flayed the central. The train was crammed, and railway authorities had ensured the service would be going out in style. The two engines and the 10 carriages, with their broad yellow band beneath the brown, looked pristine. A band would welcome us on arrival at Clyde. Would it wallow in the doldrums with songs such as Charlie Pride's Where Do I Put Her Memory and Sammy Smith's Help Me Make It Through the Night? Or would they send us out with the likes of Kenny Chesney's No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problems? The passengers were mostly middle-aged, some with children, and there were a few of the grizzled and time-ravaged. Most of us were probably sentimentalists, hankering for a lungful of coal smoke and a patina of soot, but content enough to be on the historic finale. Some amongst us, I was sure, would have been retired railway men who could have told you all you ever needed to know and more about the trains and the line. Good is possibly remembered more than bad when something is being lost. From the early days, the Central Otago Railway had its problems. Rail authorities could not be blamed for the washouts, snowfalls and slips causing hold-ups, but they could be blamed for making the trains even slower in 1909 and squeezing cost savings from the slower speed. The central route was bleak and cold in winter, and the carriages were veritable ice chambers. As time went on, the competition from road transport proved too much. We rolled out of the Grand Dunedin Railway Station on a sunny day and were soon in Caversham and then passing by Abbotsford, where the largest landslide in a built-up area in New Zealand's history occurred in 1979. 69 houses were destroyed, but miraculously, there were no fatalities. In October 2017, to refresh my memory of the first segment of the journey, I travelled on the Taieri Gorge Railway. The train manager and commentator was Julian of the Seasider. The day before, Kevin and Mike were the drivers. Marion was on refreshments and Joe was the guard. Soon we were climbing into the narrow and deep gorge carved out over millennia by the Taieri River. And straight away, I could understand why this train comes this way every day of the year, sometimes twice a day, and why the journey is a favourite of cruise ship passengers coming into Port Chalmers. Spectacular! Heavy rain had fallen in the area weeks before. Scouring the sides and pulverizing floodwater had left immense piles of tree trunks and other debris beside the river on the flatter sections. No wonder the gorge and surrounds was practically uninhabited, and the trampers in the area had to check the weather forecast carefully. The train had small viewing platforms, and I joined others on one taking photographs. Unfortunately, the elbow of a woman, 50s, kept getting in the way of my shot of the train going round a bend. A sharp rap or bark of command might have cleared the way, but that is not the thing on Dunedin Railways. And eventually, she turned, smiled charmingly, and disappeared. I got my shot a picosecond before we entered a tunnel. As in the other parts of New Zealand where railways skirt cliffs and cut through gorges, I was awestruck at the work of the engineers and construction crews. Such an amount of masonry in such rugged country. Time after time we were atop a viaduct or a tunnel. The views were wonderful, not huge as in the Rockies or on the Transalpine, but long down the gorge and deep to the river. The speed was fairly slow for safety reasons. We left at 2:30 p.m., going as fast as Hindon, 24 kilometres northwest of Dunedin, and arrived back at 6:30 p.m. That stately progress was well suited for observation and photography. A story in the Otago Witness of March 1888 attests to the popularity of the railway even then. An excursion train hauled by three locomotives took nearly 2,000 people on a Saturday that month to Mount Allen on the railway line. One man, unfortunately, keen to see the bottom of the ravine, saw more of the ravine than he had intended, for he was left behind. It was hoped he would make his way to Maloki Gully and find a bed for the night. There is a confusing plethora of mounts and Alans and Alens in the area. A Mount Alan, a little Mount Alan, and a Mount Alen. Mount Alan and little Mount Alan appear not to meet the criteria of a mountain, neither, so far as I could make out, being over 300 metres high, which, according to one definition I found, is the local relief required for a mountain. Mount Alen, at 705 metres, is beyond reproach. Strictly speaking, they should be Allen Hill and Little Allen Hill. Anyway, everything is so stark and bare, they no doubt look imposing. At one point we saw two goats nimbly scaling the side, and in scrub by the river a herd of goats, and I was reminded of Kevin Butler's story of the charging billy goat. No such heroics here. My refresher trip on the Taieri Gorge Railway in October 2017 had been impressive and enjoyable, even when the trip was over. It was still viscerally alive in me. On arrival at the halfway point at Hindon, the sight of the rolling Otago hinterland took me back to that last train to Central. It was soon apparent on the last train in 1990 that we were not the only ones come to say goodbye. People were clustered at crossings and vantage points, most just standing and staring in that silent, stolid southern way, but some waving good-naturedly. Not long after Hindon, there was Pukerangi and then Middlemarch. Entrepreneurship is alive and well in Middlemarch. No sitting around in beer-soaked bachelor misery bemoaning the lack of women. In 2001, the first Middlemarch singles ball was held to help 35 local bachelors find a partner. Some 200 women attended, some travelling on a so-called love train from Dunedin, and the event has become biennial. Word has it, some permanent relationships have been formed. And what a good thing that is, and pleasing too, that a train has helped people connect. After Middlemarch, we were soon at the Rock and Pillar, and just before Hyde, at the site of a terrible rail tragedy of 1943, when 21 passengers were killed and 47 were injured. A board of inquiry found the train had been travelling more than 70 miles per hour, in other words, 110 kilometres per hour, on a curve with a speed limit of 30. 48. It also found the driver had been drunk. He was charged with serious dereliction of duty, tried, found guilty, and sentenced to 3 years jail. A short distance on, we were near the abandoned Hamilton's Goldfield, where in the 1860s, thousands of men extracted 80,000 tons of gold. Now there is little more than the lonely cemetery and sluicing scars. Then Waipiata, well known from 1914 until 1961 for its sanatorium for the treatment of tuberculosis patients. As I took in the bare and barren hills, I appreciated how suitable the site was, with the vast spaces filled with nothing but fresh air which billowed through the wards in all seasons. Some visitors came and went from the railway stations each side of Waipiata, presumably from a sense of shame, as TB was contagious and was also considered by many as a disease of the poor. It can certainly get fresh here. Relatives of mine once lived in the locality and spoke of frozen chickens, not those in the freezer, but those in the hen house. Small wonder that when a railway man was posted here in the early 1900s, his wife cried enough and refused to go. There is more to it. For years, she had been friendly with another man, a barber who had followed the couple wherever the husband had been transferred. Instead of going to Waipiata, the wife went to Christchurch with the barber, subsequently married a third, much older man bigamously, went to the USA, was deported for immoral behaviour, and finished up with the barber in Canada, where they had a child. The railway man was well out of it in Waipiata. Soon we were at Ranfurly and had completed 123.5 kilometres of the total 214 kilometres to Clyde. We had already passed the sites of 22 stations along the line at its peak. Travellers must have needed the patience of Job on some trips. Locals clicked cameras at the train and its passengers, and the passengers clicked cameras at the landscape and the locals. Ranfurly came and went. As we progressed into valleys, the tops remained stark, but there were sheep and cattle on lush pastures and orchard after orchard. How valuable the train had been in taking out the produce. Still, the stations came. Wedderburn, Otorohua, where the Brass Monkey motorcycle rally is held each year, Ida Valley, Oripo, Lauder, Ormaco, Chato Creek, Galloway, Alexandra, each just a few kilometres apart. Locals would have met the train by buggy and later by car to drop someone off or pick someone up. Then it was all about to become a memory, for we were at Clyde. And yes, along with a few locals, there was a band to meet us. And not playing a lament, but a spirited, jaunty piece. We disembarked, milled around, and developed a bond as we idly chatted and took photographs. Within months, closure was made absolute by the ripping up of the railway line from Clyde back to Middlemarch. Marvellously, though, it was not the end of the route, and neither has the word rail disappeared from this part of the country. The 45-kilometre Dunedin to Middlemarch section remains and is used regularly by the Tairi Gorge Railway, and there is the Otago Central Rail Trail, 150-kilometre walking, cycling and horse-riding track between Middlemarch and Clyde on the route of the former railway. The trail has been credited with supporting around 1,000 full-time jobs and part-time jobs, so that the work of the builders of bridges, tunnels and viaducts continues to pay benefits. Now, I'll read to you a short account of Catherine Mansfield's journey over the Kayangaroa Plain. On the journey by sea was most beautiful, a silver point etching and a pale sun breaking through pearl clouds. There is something inexpressibly charming to me in railway travelling. I lean out of the window. The breeze blows, buffeting and friendly against my face, and the child's spirit, hidden away under 101 grey city wrappings, bursts its bonds and exults within me. I watch the long succession of brown paddocks, beautiful, with here a thick spreading of buttercups, there a white sweetness of arum lilies. And there are valleys lit with the swaying light of broom blossom. In the distance, grey farays, two eyes and a mouth, with a bright petticoat frill of a garden, creeping round them. On a white road, once a procession of patient cattle wended their way, funeral-wise, and behind them a boy rode on a brown horse. Something in the poise of his figure, in the strong, sunburnt colour of his legs, reminded me of Walt Whitman. Everything on the hills, great masses of charred logs looking for all the world like strange, fantastic beasts. A yawning crocodile, a headless horse, a gigantic gosling, a watchdog, to be smiled at and scorned in the daylight, but a veritable nightmare in the darkness. And now and again, the silver tree trunks, like a skeleton army, invade the hills. At Kaitoki, the train stopped for morning lunch, the inevitable tea of the New Zealander. The FT and I paced the platform, peering into the long wooden saloon where a great counter was piled with ham sandwiches and cups and saucers, soda cake and great billies of milk. We didn't want to eat and walked to the end of the platform and looked into the valley. Below us lay a shivering mass of white native blossom, a little tree touched with scarlet, a clump of toi-toi waving in the wind and looking for all the world like a family of little girls drying their hair. Later in the afternoon, we stopped at Jakesville. How we play inside the house, while life sits on the front doorstep and death mounts guard at the back. So that's all from me for now. And I would like to say welcome to Reverend David Crook. And he's come here to tell us about some of his railway experiences. I should mention that David lives in Dunedin, the city that has New Zealand's most magnificent and historic railway station. Welcome, David. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Philippa.
Now, what can you tell us about some of your railway journeys?
Well, I want to go back, right back to the 1890s, to Sir Julius Vogel, who was such an amazing man, a newspaper editor, scholar, wrote science fiction, and he was the key driver for building the railway network across New Zealand under Seddon and the Liberal government in the 1890s. A Troops railway station in Dunedin, which has just been restored again, has been such a draw card for travellers and visitors since it was built in the 1900s. And from Anzac Square in front, the troops went off to war, the Great War, and returned, many of them severely injured. It was the place of welcome and farewell and a great deal of feeling. MPs back in the 19th century and much later travelled by rail from Otago and Southland, from their constituencies, on that narrow gauge railways that crisscrossed New Zealand. When they reached Lyttelton, it was the overnight ferry to Wellington, a long journey. I crossed over when I was 14 with my grandmother on our way to Wellington in the Maori, which was a horrible vessel, not good stabilisers. Most of us were very sick that night.
Yes.
And you could hear the sound of people vomiting.
Oh.
We arrived half an hour late, very stormy landing, and I've never forgotten the wind and the rain in Wellington that morning, but we were desperate to put our feet on dry land.
Yes, I bet you were.
Of course, there were school parties that crossed from the South Island to the North, but also nearer home in Dunedin, young people went to school from Port Chalmers down the Otago Harbour and in from Mosgiel through the tunnel into Dunedin. They were a pretty wild lot.
And was this every day that they took the train?
Every day.
What a wonderful trip.
Well, it would have been, but they tended to misbehave. School
yes.
satchels would be thrown out the window. The windows would be opened a bit when they went through a tunnel, so everyone coughed and spluttered.
Oh, gosh, covered in soot.
Yes. But they arrived late for school and were able to come into assembly when we were halfway through it. When I was only 8 years old, my mother was working, and in the school holidays, a great family friend took her two young children and my sister and I on the train to Port Chalmers. Mm. And that was the first time we'd travelled by train.
Oh, really? Yes.
So to watch and hear the steam locomotive was very exciting on the platform. In a complete contrast to the amazing fashion shows that have been in Dunedin with the long platform what's it called? The something walk for fashion models and so on. Anyway, it would attract huge crowds, and you needed to be booked well in advance to see this fashion display. No, it's really interesting looking back at how important rail was, not just for transporting the huge containers or seeing our forestry going overseas with the great log trains leaving from Port Chalmers, but It was a wonderful way to explore the country and still is. And we really need to bring back passenger train.
Oh, absolutely. It's so relaxing. You know, who wants to be in a car?
Exactly.
If you can be on a nice train.
Yes.
Tell me, do they still have the love train?
Oh, yes.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Oh.
You're pretty sure they do.
Oh, yeah, right.
And
that's good.
Some of those romances have lasted, but there was always a great deal of publicity around them.
Yes. What fun.
Well, it was back to the time when a barn dance was very attractive, when student hops were often in an old hall with hay bales around, even if they were in Dunedin or in the outskirts of the city.
Yes.
The interwoven links between town and country were there with rail. And when a family in the city didn't have much money at school holidays to go off to aunts and uncles and cousins in the country and vice versa were much cheaper than flying somewhere, staying in motels and doing all the expensive things that kids expect these days.
Yes, yes.
To be on a farm and with the animals and out in the fresh air with a tent, or perhaps sleeping on an open veranda and a coal range and a long drop and by a river or a lake.
Yes, yes.
They were great holidays.
Wonderful, yes.
And you could go by bus or train to many of these places back in the past.
Well, do you think that they'll resurrect the railway, the trains again?
Well, they're certainly important. The tourist routes, like the Transalpine.
Yes, I've done that. It was marvellous.
The scenery is fabulous.
Mm. But, I mean, they could just resurrect the one between Dunedin and Christchurch, you know, going to Oamaru and then Christchurch.
Yes, yeah, that's a wonderful way of seeing the country.
Mm.
And there are such lovely towns in between. I mean, there's a lot of interest in Timaru and Oamaru, and down in Invercargill.
Yes.
The trip down to Southland is stunning for the range of scenery. And the best coastal scenery by rail in New Zealand is along the Otago Harbour to Waitati and Blueskin Bay, high above the sea.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
It is beautiful. Mm. Yes, yes.
But the opportunities are still there to increase those links for people by rail.
Yes, well, let's hope so.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, it would be wonderful because I can still remember some of the train trips that I've done. Not that I've done that many, but it's just so much nicer than going on a tour bus.
Hmm.
Absolutely. Well, David, I think we're about to run out of time very soon. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, it's lovely to share a spot with Catherine Mansfield. That really is exciting.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Modern, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Modern. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.